The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
In the shadow of the Washington Monument, soldiers preparing, not for war, but for celebration. Tanks on the streets of the capital city, helicopters outfitted for battle, but merely on display.
This is, the heart and soul of the Army.
And this is President Trump's long-desired showcase of American might.
We're coming together to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States Army with a grand parade, a military parade.
7,000 soldiers, 150 Army vehicles, and more than 60 aircraft, expected to draw thousands of visitors and the potential for protests.
Barriers are a big part of protection here, from concrete bollards to anti-scale fencing. 18.5 miles of this is going up around key parts of the city.
The spectacle is also a source of controversy. The cost, up to $45 million. Lawmakers of both parties bristled.
I'm most disturbed by the extravagance.
Everybody else in the jungle knows, and we're aligned. I would save the money.
The optics at issue two for an American democracy. Military pageantry like this, typically seen in places like North Korea and Russia.
I'm worried about the image that it isn't necessarily the best image to show.
A show of force in a peacetime setting, generating a very American sense of skepticism and celebration.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the Trumpet Daily Television Program, or podcast. I guess it's not a television program right now. On June 14th, you might recall when the parade took place, it was Donald Trump's 79th birthday. The Army was celebrating its 250th anniversary. And the parade, the show of force, was ridiculed by politicians, as you just saw. There was expense involved, and it was very expensive. $45 million is quite a bit. The Army estimated that more than 200,000 people came out to watch and enjoy this parade. It might have had an unplanned, and I think it did have an unplanned benefit, though. If you think back to what was taking place in mid-June, about 24 hours, a little bit less than 24 hours before that parade started, Israel started to attack Iran. They were launching preemptive strikes on June 13th. What an interesting dichotomy. Here you have a great, powerful U.S. military. It's sponsored by a huge nation with a booming economy. And ironically, with as powerful as we are, with the ability that we have to spend $45 million just for a parade, we find a nation that's really unwilling or very hesitant to fight. In Leviticus 26, verse 19, it's prophesied that the pride of our power would be broken. Contrast that with what Israel was doing, a small nation, a proportionally much smaller force. They were willing to do what was necessary to confront evil as they saw it, and as, quite honestly, most everybody in the world recognized the threat from Iran possessing weapons of mass destruction. You can understand why the Israelis felt compelled to confront that. Well, welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Program. My name is Andrew Locher. Your host, Stephen Fleury, will be flying to Tel Aviv here within a few hours. And we're anxious for him to get down there. Israel is opening up, but it's also still very complicated. So we'd like to see him get there successfully. He's set up several important interviews that we're anxious to have concluded and to present on this program. He's also there overseeing a new group of students and graduates from our college. They are volunteering on yet another archaeological excavation in the Ophel. And so things carry on. It was just, a couple weeks ago that it was very uncertain, and already we're back having escaped Israel, we're now returning back to Israel to keep doing the work there. Theodore Roosevelt, during his administration, crafted a really a great diplomatic policy. It's up on your screen right now. He said, "Speak softly and carry a big stick. You will go far." In other words, a mature, a civilized foreign policy, one that tries diplomacy first. It works with negotiation first. However, it's backed by a strong readiness with a severe force to support it, a threat of force. Now, that only works if you're willing to use that force, right? The military hopefully wasn't just purchased to put on display in a parade throughout the calm streets of the United States. The military exists as that big stick, but it has to be used that way. And for the past several decades, it has not been. We have some terrible foreign policy of late here. I'll show you a few clips to remind you.
The United States has also enhanced our military force posture in the region to strengthen our deterrence. The Department of Defense has moved the USS Gerald R. Ford Carrier Strike Group to the Eastern Mediterranean and bolstered our fighter aircraft presence. And we stand ready to move in additional assets as needed. Let me say again to any country, any organization, anyone thinking of taking advantage of this situation, I have one word. Don't. Don't.
What's the message to Iran?
Don't.
As President Biden said, just don't.
Exactly. One word. Pretty straightforward.
Amazing as we approach the 4th of July, as we stand as the world's most capable military, you see displays like that. How unpresidential. And the world is not safer as a result of that soft policy, the one word don't, as if that's going to solve problems. When you withdraw your troops, when you don't use the big stick to enforce diplomacy, to encourage negotiation, then you find the world becomes much more dangerous. Their policy failed. It's been failing for really decades, as I said. There has been one standout, as we've talked about. But President Roosevelt's policy is something to really consider. So just over a week after Israel started to strike Iran, a little bit less than a week after we had a parade that's been planned for quite a while, obviously, taking place in the streets of Washington, D.C., as the politicians, you know, grumble and complain, and the mass media tries to really portray it like, well, this was just, you know, an older man that just wanted to see, you know, attention drawn to him. And that he was stealing it from the military. Well, less than a week later, the United States got more involved very directly. And yet another parade, you could argue, a very forceful show of power, the execution of a foreign policy where we tried to talk, but the negotiations, the diplomacy failed. And so you have to use the big stick. That is what took place in Iran. Now, as it turns out, part of that attack was the ruse that President Donald Trump was waffling. Will he attack? Will he not? Will he do it tomorrow? Will he, you know, hold back? And that worked really well. And you know why? Because this nation waffles. Even the staunch supporters of President Donald Trump argued both decisions. Some were advocating, you know, for a strong military strike, while others were saying, don't do it. Don't. Be like everybody else before you. Just don't. And their main argument was, this is not our war. Israel's perfectly capable of stopping things. This is not our war. Is that true? Isn't the Iranian threat relevant to the entire world? weapons of mass destruction, the means to deliver them, you know, thousands of kilometers. They have been working on developing that power. And again, we don't know how close they were to it, if they already had it. We don't know if it's something we're going to see here soon. But we also know this story is not over. It's not over at all. I will counter, you know, this isn't our war statement by saying it is our war. This is our war. And that war that was started here recently exposed some weaknesses in the United States. I have an article here from, I think this is Fox Business. And what the article talks about is the fact that it actually exposed some of our weaknesses. And what's ironic about this is the inner function between Israel and the United States and other Western nations can be disrupted in the event that one goes to war. As this article points out, it exposed the defense industry's potential weak points in supply chain. The United States relies heavily on Israel, mostly for cybersecurity, as this article points out. But this gentleman that did this report said there were 28,000 U.S.-based companies that are dependent on technology that's made or updated in Israel. 28,000 companies. And they went on to say that this explosion of dependency of technology for the Middle East, it actually numbers into a couple hundred thousand companies that could be affected if Israel has to shut down to fight war. It does affect the United States. It does affect the rest of the world. There is a reliance one upon another. We do have a complicated world to fight through. And that's exactly what we're seeing before us. Of course, you know, all of these events have been discussed thoroughly on our website, through the Key of David program, through the Trumpet Daily. It's not my purpose to rehash what happened in Iran and Israel. My daughter and I have been talking about that, what took place over there. We've been talking about, you know, the duplicity in current events. And we feel very blessed to be attached to, you know, the Philadelphia Church of God, to the Trumpet program, or to the Trumpet website, the Trumpet Daily, the Key of David, all of these books and booklets we have to study. We have a strong idea of what's going on. But imagine the confusion if you didn't, you know, if you weren't locked into these sources, if you didn't have these answers. It's very, very complicated out there. How do you know who to trust? How do you know what's really taking place? Well, Satan the devil is described in Revelation 12, verse 9, as having deceived the whole world. And he's very crafty. I mean, it seems like there's two sides to every argument, whether it be, you know, domestically, internationally, with education, with health, with military, with diplomacy. There's so many questions and so few answers. And so, the waters are pretty muddied. But to complicate things, human nature is unbridled in this end time. Paul told Timothy that it was going to be dangerous because people would become so evil, so unwilling to take a moral ground. I can't think of any better example than the Congress. And we see it more and more now with video evidence. You know, Chuck Schumer one day is against something and, you know, 2 years later, he's very much for it because it fits his political agenda. Absolutely no substance there at all. Just pure selfishness. The Apostle James said that a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. Whether it be a congressman, whether it be, you know, law enforcement, a president, a nation, you see that is so true. God sent a prophet to Old Testament Israel warning them that he was going to use the Holy Roman Empire to correct the nations of Israel because, quote, they're a hypocritical nation. God can't stand hypocrisy. He doesn't like duplicity. He doesn't like, you know, double-mindedness. God works, you know, with firm and true proofs. The truth is what sets us free, as we know. Well, I want to talk about that today on the program. It's a crazy world, as we all know. And it can look fine on the outside. I'm going to show you examples of this. It looks fine on the outside. It's very easy to be deceived. But if you just scratch a little bit below the surface, you see that it's filled with evil and corruption, selfishness and greed. And it is taking this world into a catastrophe that mankind has never experienced before. That's pretty startling. I want to read to you Isaiah chapter 1, verse 5. This is from the Amplified Version. They add a few words here that I think help. It says, "Why should you be stricken and punished anymore, since it brings no correction? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick. The whole heart is faint, feeble, sick, nauseated. From the sole of your foot, even to the head thereof, there is no soundness or health in the nation's body, but wounds and bruises, fresh and bleeding stripes. They have not been pressed out or closed up, nor bound up or softened with oil. No one has troubled to seek a remedy." That's a pretty vivid passage. Two verses from Isaiah, verses 5 and 6. And again, it does describe a nation and say like a word picture. And as God says, well, you're not responding to anything. You have these wounds, and you know, if the news cycle changes the next day, we just leave the wound open. You move on, and it's killing you as a nation. You're sick from the head all the way to the bottom of your feet, and nobody is troubled to seek a remedy. So what is God supposed to do with a nation that's like that? Well, again, we're going to make that point using several examples, just looking at the United States right now. Just looking at the news from the last day or two to make this point. Jesus Christ was obviously very vigorously opposed by the religious leaders, the secular leaders in his day. And he described them quite well. And this actually describes the end time nations of Israel very well. He says, "You hypocrites," he said, this is breaking the middle of this, Matthew 23, verse 27. "Hypocrites, for you are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but are within, full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness." It can look so good, but the inside is troubling. We have to dig deeper. What a description of the United States. Today is July 3rd. It's not the 4th. I won't talk to you about hot dogs today. In the times past on the July 4th TD that I've hosted, I always talk about hot dogs. I don't know why. I was joking with Dwight Falk. And there's so many news stories about hot dogs. So this year, I told him I wasn't going to talk about it, and here I am. Today is July 3rd, and we're all anticipating tomorrow. It's a public holiday. It's a chance to spend time with family, friends, barbecues. You get to enjoy a day off work. And perhaps one of my favorite parts of this Independence Day celebration is the fireworks. You could go ahead and roll that clip. July 4th is, you know, maybe not as July 3rd, that is not as important to us in the States, but I'll quote to you something at the end. It's a very important day. So the footage you're seeing, and I want to be careful with this, I'll give full disclaimers. It was a tweet that came across yesterday. I've seen it before. I'll just read to you what the tweet said that accompanied this footage. "Never forget July 4th, 2020, when Gavin Newsom told Californians that they couldn't celebrate our Independence Day with fireworks and gatherings. Californians showed true spirit that night. Remember, rebellion is in our heritage." So if that truly is Los Angeles, and if the order was given, no fireworks, no celebration, that's typical America. If you tell them not to do it, you can ensure every block, every neighborhood are going to have spectacular displays of fireworks. And that's what was taking place there. Again, that's probably not entirely accurate. And if it's footage from a different city, if that's not what happened, I'm sorry. But it does make the point that if we're told not to do something, that's probably what is going to be done. Now, I'd like to quote to you from ABC News. Of course, you know, we get excited about the barbecues and everything, but we also know that public holidays tend to bring with it a threat of trouble, protest at a minimum, or terrorism as a potential likelihood. ABC News reported on July 1st, it said a lone wolf actor poses the biggest threat to the 4th of July celebrations in New York and San Francisco. They single those sites out. They said they're concerned, I'm just kind of paraphrasing here, they're concerned about a potential threat of a copycat that will look at the 2025 New Year's Day vehicle ramming terrorist attack in New Orleans. They're worried that that's going to occur again. They said that continued foreign terrorist organizations are messaging each other, encouraging attacks against Western targets. A little further down, they say those who could be inspired by terrorist organizations who are in the United States are of concern for law enforcement. This is ABC News, you know, a very liberal source, but they want to have the word out there. I mean, they're quoting law enforcement saying, look, there could be some risk. This is the nation, the times in which we live. They said in New York, officials are concerned about individuals, quote, motivated by a broad range of racial, ethnic, political, religious, anti-government, societal, or personal grievance. Human nature, right? There's all kinds of flavor of reasons to protest, to go out and kill in New York. It says, of course, these actors, U.S.-based violent extremists, supporting the foreign terrorist organizations, and domestic extremists not linked to those organizations represent two of the most persistent threats. This isn't going away. All of the public holidays bring these warnings, these opportunities. They say lone wolf offenders in particular remain a concern due to their ability to often avoid detection until operational and to inflict significant casualties. So not really something we look forward to. They talked about California and San Francisco in particular, worried about violent extremists and criminals. You know, people that are here that as they say, they want to exploit or target First Amendment protected demonstrations. They want to, you know, target celebrations of our nation's independence. They're looking for a mass casualty opportunity. They're looking to disrupt things. This bulletin from the FBI says, we remain concerned that these malicious actors and violent extremists may attempt to create public safety hazards using weapons, chemical irritants, this is gross, bodily fluids, and other hazardous materials, and enter and disrupt designated event areas that are closed to public access. So they're sophisticated. They're planning for it. What would a public holiday be in the United States without threat of protest? With, you know, we're not celebrating our independence. We're exercising it to destroy the nation. Human nature at its worst. The Newsweek reported that, you know, some of these groups that are planning some attacks, or they're encouraging them, are the same ones that supported and encouraged and sponsored the No Kings rally. Remember that from a week or so ago? It's estimated maybe up to 5 million people participated in that demonstration against the current administration, against our policies of trying to repair some of the damage from all the illegal migration that has taken place. And I was just thinking about it, you know, 5 million, that's a big number. But in some ways, it's fractional too. If this country is roughly 50-50 divided, you know, 50% conservative, 50% liberal, and you just take the population of the United States, 5 million people, though quite a few, and I know not everybody's gonna come out to protest, but 5 million people represents about 1 to 1.5% of our population. What percentage of the population really is disgruntled? It's a good question. It's hard to tell because mainstream media, they really want to blow this up. They want you to think that every city, you know, half the city is ready to you know, go lynch somebody because they're so upset. And that's simply not true. I would like to quote another CNN article here. And again, I'll just paraphrase. It says drivers hitting the road this 4th of July weekend won't need to break the bank to fill up at the gas pump. I filled up the other day. I was pretty happy about that. They said that the gas prices are down to like a 4 or 5 year low. Hasn't been this cheap for several years. And if it gets a little bit lower, then it just breaks even more records. So in many ways, that's good. I mean, on the surface, if you just look at the news headlines today, if you consider the fact that you could go to the gas pump and it's never been cheaper, it hasn't been this cheap in 5 years, you could think things look pretty good. Inflation is at 2.4%. I looked up the peak inflation during the Biden administration. It was 9.1% in June, just 3 years ago. So from 9% down to 2%. This morning, that Rick Santelli came out. He was pretty excited. He's a pundit on CNBC. He reports live his reaction to government statistics that are revealed. And the jobs numbers were actually quite good. There was 147,000 jobs added. So again, inflation is coming down. Gas prices are coming down. More people are working. Things look really good. The markets have recovered their losses when Donald Trump started talking and warning about tariffs. They've rebounded. Of course, everything is still very much unsettled. So let me ask you, how is our economy doing? How is the economy affecting you? Well, it probably depends on who you ask. It depends on the sources you use to gather your news. Even economic data, statistics can be biased. I'll get to that in a moment. I'd encourage you to visit the debt clock. There's a website. I think the guys will be able to put that up. It's the usdebtclock.org. And as you look at that, a couple things. Obviously, you've got the $37 trillion of national debt. Down below in the gold color is the Doge clock. And I'll come back to that. But nearly $542 billion worth of savings are projected. Now, I'm not the sharpest tack with economics and that type of thing. I have this Google AI summary, so again, excuse the source. But they say consumers pay more close attention to cumulative inflation. So I said inflation is down, it's at 2.4%. It says prices are 23.7% more expensive today than they were before the coronavirus pandemic began in February 2020. So 2.4% sounds great. But when you keep adding on top of that, we find ourselves nearly 24% higher inflation. Things cost, you know, a quarter more than they did just 5 years ago. More quotes from you to make you a little bit nervous here. This is from the Financial Times, July 1st. And this article, I'll just quote a little bit to you. It says the U.S. dollar suffers worst start to the year since 1973. This article says Donald Trump's trade policies and rising debt levels have sparked a decline of more than 10% in the first half of 2025. Now, you might recognize that we've drawn attention to this before, that the strength of the U.S. dollar might not seem all that important to us, but it's hugely important. And we're off to the worst start of the year, calendar year, since 1973. This article says the president's stop-start tariff war, the United States' vast borrowing needs, and worries about independence of the Federal Reserve have undermined the appeal of the dollar as a safe haven for investors. They address the big, beautiful bill, the catastrophe. Says that bill has fueled concerns over the sustainability of Washington's borrowings, sparking an exodus from U.S. Treasury market. Again, maybe this doesn't seem, the most interesting thing to you, but listen to this. It says the currency slide has confounded widespread predictions at the start of the year that Trump's trade war would do greater damage to economies outside of the United States while fueling American inflation, strengthening the currency against all the rivals. So the expectation was, these tariffs were going to really hurt the world. And they're going to be great for the United States. And what they're finding, as was predicted by a lot of people, they're terrible for everybody. They are terrible for everybody. And this is prophetically important because we discuss frequently you know, an economic catastrophe is going to, you know, start events. It's really going to accelerate events with the Holy Roman Empire coming together and the start of, you know, riots and things that lead into tribulation. Said instead, the euro, which several Wall Street banks were predicting would fall to parity with the U.S. dollar, has risen 13%. So instead of strengthening the U.S. dollar, it's falling, the worst it's done in nearly 30 years. And the flip side of that is the euro is strengthening 13% so far this year. That's a 25% change between the two currencies. It says demand has risen for safe assets elsewhere, such as German bonds. There you go. The economy is, you know, turning to Germany. The big, beautiful bill is dangerous, to say the least. It's in the House of Representatives right now. It's a lot of pressure, you know, by President Trump and the GOP to push it through, to have maybe a symbolic signing on the 4th of July under the fireworks. You know, here's this big, beautiful bill. And how, you know, what a great representation of the beautiful on the outside, but full of trouble on the inside. And what's interesting about this bill, what's interesting about the economy, and this is my opinion, but neither side, neither the conservatives nor the liberals, neither one are really sincerely and deeply concerned about the health of the nation. Rather, it's just a political match. That's what they're concerned about. Re-election or maybe continuing something that's nefarious on their part. That is their motivation. We're supposed to just sit here and watch. Just another quick example of the danger to the United States economy. The nation is quickly dying. I was going to read more of this to you, but I'll quote. It's from the Wall Street Journal. The title of this article is Amazon is on the cusp of using more robots than humans in its warehouse. Now, of course, you know, that sounds great. And I'll talk about some of the strengths here as we go. This is from June 30th. Said Amazon has deployed more than 1 million robots in those workplaces. It's very close to being on the same level as the number of human beings that they employ. Further down, it says 75% of Amazon's global deliveries are assisted in some way by robots. 75%. It says robots are also supplanting some employees, helping the company to slow down hiring. So here's the risk, as you'd expect. Robots don't go on strike. Robots don't need healthcare benefits or retirement plans. They work 24/7. Robots do what you tell them to do. They don't complain about it. And so you can understand the appeal to use them. And the explosion of technology, the things these robots can do, you can, you know, look at YouTube videos if you want later to see examples of the robots that are used by Amazon. It is really stunning. I won't take time to read the rest of it. It just talks about the threat to the number of employees. And Amazon's actually pretty excited. They foresee a diminished human staff and an enhanced or a more numerous robotic staff. And they countered by saying, well, the human jobs that will be there won't be so much moving boxes, but maintaining control of the robots. We'll see how that works out. I could go on and on. I do want to show you a pretty rare clip of actual journalism from CNN. I watched this, and it kind of illustrates the fact that here you have, you know, commentators, when presented with facts or some of the good things, they don't know how to respond. Let's start with clip 5 here, please.
Winning became a punchline that Trump's opponents used to lampoon him in his first administration. He was a political novice then, surrounded by a team with which he was unfamiliar, and he was probably as surprised as the rest of us were that he won the election. This time is different. This time he came with a plan and a cabinet with senior advisors comprised of loyalists all well known to the president. And recently he's exhibited a more layered approach to governing on both the domestic and international front, no longer solely guided by winning each day's news cycle. By any objective measure, President Trump has his opponents on the run.
So I should have written down the date that commentator was making that point. It was within the last week. And it's got to be really painful for CNN to report that. Let me give you some examples here of some of the other things he said. Again, that's how he ended. And these are some of his examples used throughout. Clips 6 through 9, please.
The mission was carried out with stealth and with precision. There were no American casualties. And while Congress is divided after receiving briefings on the extent of the damage, I'm sure that we've derailed Iran's nuclear program, at least temporarily. And there's some valuable deterrent effect for America's adversaries who witnessed last week's exercise. Then, last Tuesday, President Trump left the White House en route to Europe. At the time, there was a question as to whether Israel and Iran would honor a ceasefire that caused the president to offer the most unfiltered, non-controversial, direct words that I can recall anybody ever saying about the Middle East.
We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the f*** they're doing. Do you understand that?
Cut to The Hague, where he arrived for NATO meetings and was able to wrangle an agreement from our allies to more than double their defense spending target from 2% of gross domestic product to 5% by 2035. Back at home, Trump claimed that he's reached a trade deal with China and soon expects the same with India. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick told Bloomberg that the deal was signed earlier this week. China's Commerce Ministry said Friday the two sides had further confirmed the details of the framework. Of course, Trump's initial imposition of tariffs wreaked havoc on American markets back in the spring. But now the markets have rebounded and grown. The S&P 500, NASDAQ, hit record highs just yesterday. And it's not just the stock market. Inflation, the great economic fear of recent times, seems to be tamed. The rate is now reported at 2.4%, down from a high of 7% just 4 years ago. Meanwhile, blue-collar workers have seen real wage growth of 1.7% in Trump's first 5 months. This is the largest such increase in nearly three generations. Notwithstanding its impact on our national debt, there's also hope among some that Trump's big, beautiful bill will give further financial relief to blue-collar workers, as well as create incentives to build more factories in the U.S. And then there's the border. Crossings have slowed to a trickle. According to CBP's May update, Southwest border encounters have fallen to about 282 a day, a drop of 93% from last year and the lowest since the early 1960s. Perhaps the loudest cheering for those border numbers is coming from America's Latino community, which might initially sound counterintuitive. Yesterday came a huge decision from the Supreme Court. The High Court declared that federal district judges exceeded their authority when issuing nationwide injunctions against Trump's executive order on birthright citizenship. This will, of course, strengthen executive power both for Trump and for his successors.
That's quite a role. That's quite a last few weeks, as you've been hearing about from Mr. Stephen Florio over the last, last couple of programs. A lot of success. Things can look so good on the outside, and yet this is a divided nation. So when one is happy, the other is upset. I wanted to quote from a Gallup poll, and this is really actually a very troubling article here. They ran a survey in America. The subhead is "Pride among Democrats tumbles while independents also hit new low, more than offsetting increases among Republicans." But the title, as you see there, is American Pride Slips to a New Low. They talk about just the change in the last few decades. And again, I won't take time to go through everything here, but the pride in America is tumbling. You'd expect it among the Democrats because things aren't going their way. Look at CNN. I mean, again, that had to be very difficult for them to report. Independents had a lot of hope in Donald Trump, but they also are they have their position where they might like the economic benefit, but really dislike the use of the military. You can just go on and on. There's so many issues to be divided about. This article, compares the Democrats to the Republicans. Republicans largely are, more pride-filled in the United States, but even there, they've dropped, tens of percent over the last couple decades. They talk about the generational differences. Again, as you'd expect, Gen Z, and I forget the generation before that, but the most recent generations, the younger the people, the less the pride, the more the disregard and quite honestly, hatred for America. And that's not a surprising stat to hear when you see the protests, when you see all the opposition, the fighting. This nation is losing pride in its power, as God prophesied. It's losing pride in its own self. You see the same thing in Britain, Australia. You see the same thing in Israel. All over you see this slip of pride. Well, I want to take a quick break. This has been pretty active, but we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to draw your attention to yet another news story that maybe you didn't catch, but I think is just, again, catastrophic in nature.
Prosperity, government, trade, technology, stability, freedom. The last two centuries have been the exception in human history. How did we get here? The 19th century was dominated by an empire that exported civility, order, standards, and opened the doors for global trade. It ended slavery and implemented a system of governance that protected people's rights. And then in the 20th century, a new power came to dominate. Remarkably, one that would continue in the same traditions as its predecessor. For 200 years, the United States and Britain dominated the world stage. How did these two nations rise to prominence so suddenly? And why are their legacies so relentlessly attacked today? The astonishing truth is that your Bible prophesied the rise of Britain and the United States. It also prophesied their fall. The biblical identity of these two nations is the vital key that unlocks Bible prophecy. This lost master key to prophecy is revealed in Herbert W. Armstrong's most requested book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You must understand the biblical identities of these two nations to comprehend where we are in Bible prophecy today. To learn more about this vital truth, request your free copy of The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
Welcome back. That is a terrific book that you could study over and over again, and it's so relevant to today. You would have thought that it was written this morning. It's so timely. Well, on the local news, I heard a story the other morning about a couple of doctors and pharmacists in the state of Oklahoma that were arrested for committing fraud against the Medicare payment system. We'll just watch a couple clips here to kind of set the story. This is an announcement by the Department of Justice explaining what took place just a few days ago. So clips 10 through 12, please.
We are announcing today charges against 324 defendants for their alleged participation in healthcare fraud schemes involving approximately $14.6 billion in false claims submitted to Medicare, Medicaid, and other healthcare programs. This takedown resulted in criminal charges against 74 defendants, including medical professionals who fueled America's deadly opioid crisis for personal profit. These are not isolated instances of poor judgment. These are calculated schemes designed to exploit Americans struggling with addiction while enriching the very people who were duty-bound to help them heal. We charged pill mill operators who prescribed unnecessary opioids. We dismantled networks of corrupt pharmacies that existed solely to distribute drugs to addicts and dealers, feeding the addiction crisis that has devastated so many American communities. This is not healthcare. It is a staggering breach of trust. Many of the defendants charged as part of this takedown specifically targeted our most vulnerable citizens, elderly Americans in nursing homes, individuals with disabilities, those battling serious illnesses, and more. For example, our prosecutors charged 7 defendants, including 5 medical professionals, in connection with approximately $1 billion in fraudulent claims to Medicare and other healthcare benefit programs for performing medically unnecessary skin grafts on dying patients as they were seeking to spend their final days with dignity and peace. That conduct is exactly as callous and disturbing as it sounds.
That report just shocked me, and I'll spare you the details, but a very sophisticated way for professionals like doctors, pharmacists, as he said there. There's even foreign actors involved in stealing from Medicare. You know, fueling a drug epidemic in this country. These are individuals that we trust, or that we're supposed to trust, to help us in a time of crisis. And the examples of what they uncovered are just shocking. The hospitals are involved. When they see some of the examples that they cited, if a patient is dying, they'll create these additional procedures that essentially outstrips the patient's insurance. And so their insurance pays everything they're supposed to, and they stop. And then the remaining bill is sent back to the patient's family. They, of course, can't pay it. But guess what? Medicare in the United States will pay 65% of that outstanding or bad debt, as it's called. And what's shocking about that is that the hospitals aren't necessarily going after the patient's family, although they are. They know that whatever they overcharge, whatever exorbitant amount is on that bill, they will be able to take from the taxpayers, from the U.S. government. And so you hear all of this talk about, you know, the big, beautiful bill that's doing away with, you know, Medicare. It's going to hurt families. Nobody can have any help anywhere. When you look at what's taking place, if you look at the timing of that announcement, the arrests, hundreds of people, if I'm not mistaken, I stand to be corrected on that. But again, professionals, human nature is what we're talking about today. We have a booklet written actually by the host of this program, Stephen Fleury. It's a brief little booklet, but it explains to you the evils of human nature and the prophecies about it, and how in this end time, you have people that are no scruples. They just go out and try to fill their pockets. They got to get it while they can. And that's, again, just one example. You find, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of others. You can, again, look at what Doge was trying to uncover. It really is a sick country. Might look so good. We have such, you know, caring professionals. We have such advances with, you know, medications or the medical industry. And yet it's just another example of corruption, much like you see in politics, education, you know, all of the scandals there. I mean, you can just go on and on. It doesn't matter what sector of society you look at. There are serious problems because of the character of man. That is going to change. I'll just show you this one clip because I just have to. This is CNN came out, and again, they're trying to scaremonger people away from the big, beautiful bill. And again, they have some good points, but here they're using an example of, you know, closing down USAID and the threat that it poses to society. Let's go ahead with clip two, please.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio is hailing the end of USAID, the nation's largest foreign aid agency, even as a new analysis finds that its closure could contribute to some 14 million deaths in the next 5 years.
Who's going to follow that up? Were there 14 million deaths in 5 years because we closed USAID? You know, CNN will just make that statement. They'll put that out there. People will get scared. They'll get angry at the government. You know, how could we be so cold and callous? And yet, again, the examples of corruption there are laughable. It's shocking where we were sending money, how it was being wasted. You know, kudos to trying to stop it. But as you know, the political will shut down Doge for all intents and purposes is going to draw attention to the fact that, okay, $540 billion of savings, if that's actually realized savings, that's awesome. Nobody, you know, complains about that, but their goal was $2 trillion. Who hears about Doge anymore? We've moved on. It's been shut down effectively by the political machine, and the waste and corruption only gets worse, regardless of the party. Well, I was going to quote to you another survey from Gallup. This is from February 27th. And basically, their survey was about how Americans do not trust the media. And that is obviously no surprise. Again, it's getting far worse, much worse. It's, you know, the Republicans hate the mainstream media. Donald Trump makes fun of them all the time. And you see this hatred. Who are you supposed to believe? Where are we supposed to, you know, get our bearings and find truth so we can make logical decisions, so that we can decide what legislation actually does make sense? How can we heal as a nation? Well, as Jesus Christ said, a house divided against itself cannot stand. Seven, eight years before President Lincoln was elected president and served as president. About 8 years before that, he gave a speech in Illinois, and he said the same thing. He quoted that a house divided against itself cannot stand. It was a speech about slavery. And he said one way or the other, we are either going to be totally divided, we're going to be totally united, but some of these issues, you know, need to be resolved. And how was it resolved? With warfare. How will the divided nation be corrected? Well, God says he's going to send the sword against a hypocritical nation. If we're double-minded, we are absolutely unstable. Well, I was going to talk about the raid on Entebbe. I'm going to play a short video for you. I just wanted to draw attention to this. This actually happened on July 3rd. And so while the Israelis are maybe not as excited about July 4th for us, this certainly was a highlight for them. We'll go ahead and play clip three, please.
It all started June 27th, 1976, when four Palestinians from the PFLP terror group hijacked an Air France passenger jet en route to Paris. The terrorists then diverted the plane to Entebbe, Uganda, with the support of then-Ugandan President Idi Amin, all while demanding a $5 million ransom and the release of hundreds of prisoners worldwide. Upon landing in Uganda, though, the hijackers released all of the non-Jewish and non-Israeli hostages off to Paris, and they threatened to begin killing the remaining hostages within 48 hours unless all demands were met. Well, thankfully, it was actually in interviewing these released hostages that Israeli commandos were able to get a better picture of what they were up against, and with that, the rescue mission was hatched. 100 elite commandos would fly hours through enemy territory to Uganda to then impersonate President Amin's motorcade, eliminate the terrorists, liberate over 100 hostages, and cripple Uganda's ability to give chase, all in just about 90 minutes. It was a plan that would go awry within minutes of touchdown, killing lead officer Yoni Netanyahu and crippling commando Soren Hershko, but which would nevertheless largely result in success.
A tremendous historic example of negotiating at first, but using the big stick. And what we see examples of oftentimes when they actually do use military decisively is a very quick resolution to the problem. If you have access to the September 1976 Plain Truth magazine, Herbert Armstrong wrote an article about the significance of that Mission Impossible Skyjack Rescue. I think that was the title there. That's, again, September 1976 Plain Truth magazine. Mr. Armstrong was actually tied into the activities of July 3rd and July 4th in Israel when all of that took place. So we've looked today at two different nations. You know, a big, powerful nation that's lost its will to fight, that's lost all of its pride, and the chaotic, you know, world that ensues. And then Israel, at least historically, they're not perfect either, but they give an example of Teddy Roosevelt's policy. Speak softly and carry a big stick. You will go far. Try to work things out with negotiations. Try to resolve the issue as quickly as possibly. But if necessary, use force to back your diplomacy. That's quite a lesson. The Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 8 says, there's a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. God obviously hates war. He hates murder. He hates violence. God will bring peace, but only after human nature has been conquered. You see, mankind has to submit his will to God. This is Satan's world. We see evidence around us every single day, but there is a much, much better time coming. Speaking of time, I'm out of it. It's been nice being with you today. Hope you have an enjoyable family experience on the 4th of July.